So today, remember our assignment was to be in three different groups where we were to discuss some of the major issues that are challenging to our own particular communities. And the idea was that as much as possible for devotees to bring up the major concern that they themselves had and to share that with their group, and for the group to try to offer some advice based on that particular problem. Those who had chance to participate in that assignment today should have noticed a couple of things. One thing you perhaps noticed is that every community has its different type of problems. Just like in some places, one thing is very easy, something else is very difficult. That is there. You also may have noticed that perhaps some of the same problems that you are being confronted with in your community or experiencing, that they're almost the exact that are in other communities or some other communities. You may have also experienced that things that you thought were very serious problems in your community, that you may have been surprised to see that there are other communities that have things far more serious and complex than yours. But the idea is to increase our understanding of our immediate environments, as well as our ISKCON family under Srila Prabhupada, understand more about our position as Vaishnavas at this particular time in planetary history, and to see how we work through the difficulties, or how we honestly try to evaluate them so that we can do the necessary. Now, yesterday, we may have mentioned some things, and maybe even the day before, some things that may seem a little cynical or a little negative in one sense. That is, of course, not our intention. But our intention is to try to address things in the most realistic fashion as possible. Because this is also humility. Humility deals with an honest expression, regardless to the environment, and to always be trying to see how we can serve Krishna, serve Vaishnava, serve Srila Prabhupada, and give the best that we can. So we can give the best we can as we understand what we have and what is needed. So this is one of the reasons we look at some of these issues. If we think that we have a cold and we have pneumonia, we will not take the necessary medicine to deal with the proper disease. So we look at how grave or how serious the disease is, basically for good reasons, because we want to see how to expediently to resolve the particular problem. So this is why we're looking at things in this kind of perspective, so that we can look closer at ways of how we heal the individual and heal the community. So maybe two or three of you are coming for the first time. We cannot so much backtrack, but we've been talking a lot about just what is ISKCON, what is UBC, what is leadership, what is our duty to the families, to each other, to the secular world. We're looking at different things that cause progress in the community and different things that can bring failure. So we looked yesterday very close, particularly at one of our greatest contributors, Rupa Goswami, who is chief of Goswamis for us in many ways, and is particularly giving us the basic guidelines. Just as Lord Chaitanya gave us the Shastakam prayers in such succinct form with such potency, Goswami has given us many writings, but especially the Upadesa Samrita, which is a guideline for helping us to develop individually as well as collectively. Also, we are looking at community as like a living organism. That community has its own maturation, its growth experiences. And basically, just like the integrity of the character of an individual determines its particular destiny. We understand the different types of karma unfoldments. Also, the character of leadership of an organization also determines its destiny. So the people make the leaders, and of course the leaders make the people. As the people have higher and higher quality amongst themselves, they demand or they engender a greater quality amongst the leaders. As the leaders have greater sense of integrity and character, they also transmit that to the people, to the praja in general. So we ask you another assignment we had yesterday was to give someone a gift. So hopefully you took a little time, advantage of doing that in your busy day. But try to make it an ongoing part of your devotional service, that when opportunity is there to give someone something as a way that you are honoring their existence, appreciating the association, the way that you are encouraging them, and of course the way that you engage in priti, in the exchanges of love. And the more that there is the acceleration of love, then of course there is less and less of the lust. So you can check with others, those who are coming for the first time, about the specifics of what we discussed. We're trying to look at things actually quite in a detailed manner. It may seem that we are sort of skirting in some areas, just like yesterday there was a question about, well, we have Varnashram Dharma. So why are we not looking more at that? Well, categorically we are. We understand, you can analyze Varnashram Dharma in many ways. We can say it in one sense, it is the best system. Srila Prabhupada has explained, it is the system that allows us to develop Krishna consciousness for the masses dealing with the material energies. It is a way to honor the fact that we have material bodies, to honor the fact that we have material needs and demands, and how to use or function with those demands in a way that we minimize the stagnation and we maximize the spiritual thrust. It's a way that we honor community, we honor associations, we honor differences. We know that we are all the same, ultimately, in our authentic spiritual identity, but we are quite different in our conditioned state. So how do we honor those differences in such a way that we are personalist, but that we do not move ourselves away from the ultimate goals that we are trying to attain? So the Varnashram system is based on the people have different idiosyncratic tendencies, they have different perceptions, they have different tastes, etc., mellows, and how do we look at that in a way that we are able to encourage the person to feel valued and to give their greatest contribution when someone is engaged in things that they have a natural present tendency for, they obviously will feel better, they will progress faster, and they will give more to the environment. Take the converse of that and you see what happens when people are not recognized based on their idiosyncratic tendencies, their propensities, and when they do not feel particularly cared for. So we're talking about these things from the top and the bottom and filling in the middle because we realize that a healthy Varnashram Dharma system is based on that particularly the leadership is aware of the needs of the people and is sufficiently caring for them while they are developing themselves or have already developed sufficiently, and that they are trying to see how to arrange for the greatest good for the greatest number of people. Now, if the goal of what we're ultimately trying to attain and the goal of what our society is supposed to be about in this format is not clear, if the appreciation of quality sadhu sangha is not there, if the appreciation of the differences is not there in a way of a synergistic sense, then we were saying very strongly that it would create casteism, it would create tyranny or tyrants, it would create fragmentations even more. Because, again, when there is the proper nucleus and it's honored, then the more that there are differences and we look at those differences, it complements. But to the degree that not, when we start categorizing and classifying, then if the classifications are not really based on what is best for spiritual acceleration, then it can serve in the opposite effect, and it can actually hinder people from their spiritual growth. This is why we're talking the first day, how Krishna consciousness is based on an autocratic situation or monarchical, and how our present situation is some semblance of that. It's an oligarchy. But how these things are most powerful when used properly, and when not, they become the most threatening to human existence. They can produce the most exploitation that one can imagine. You talk about the different types of power, we'll draw more attention to such. Our major theme today was to look at what we have to share with each other about some things about our community investigation. And then we wanted to hone in particularly on giving each of you some very clear techniques of how to deal with conflicts. This is most important in Kali Yuga, most important for us, because so much of success, whether it's a family, whether it's a business, whether it's some other type of social or political group, whether it's a community, its success and its health is based on its ability to judiciously, expediently resolve conflicts. And where there is not a clear understanding of how to do such a resolution of conflicts, then there will be more conflicts amalgamating, and there will be a lot of anxieties and frustrations due to such. Because conflicts, we'll be discussing, are not really something bad, but conflicts are often a natural growth from diversity. Conflicts give us a chance to look closer at social systems or political systems, economic systems, how they're working or how they're not working. It gives us a chance to evaluate closer what is happening in relationship. It gives us a chance to evaluate closer our fears, our aspirations, our perceptions, or the way we codify things. And most important, it gives us a distinct chance to get reciprocation from others in the environment and gives us a chance to see what we can do in a way that is satisfying, or to see how we can serve each other, or to look closer to see what areas we perhaps are not rendering sufficient service. So conflict can send up an amazing signal to give us, draw attention to some areas that we can bring more care, more affection, more love, more concern, or better examples, etc. So this is a serious issue in our present day society, is that we are constantly engaging in conflicts in a mode of battle. And battles bring wounds, casualties, etc. In the present, and it brings enemies and feuds in the future. And so it has its way of taking away from the sweetness of bhakti. But before we go into looking deeper at conflict, which you may want to write some points down, hopefully the lights will come on by that time, so that you can take some of this back into your families and into your communities. Very important that we more and more are reading the philosophy, hearing the philosophy, applying it in our own lives, applying it in our environments, so that we have more results. When we do not have sufficient results, our faith naturally will get weak. We can't keep hoping and thinking and wishing and involving ourselves, and if we're not getting results, we definitely will gradually begin to focus our energies in other areas, because we are pleasure seekers and we need security and we need a sense of, we're looking ultimately for longevity, for security, for happiness, etc. And so if we are trying certain things and it's not coming, then the tendency will be to give up or to try something else, or to keep trying but with less and less enthusiasm, utsaha, motivation, and determination. So maybe we'll take Mother Jamuna's group first. So whoever the scribe was, whoever did the writing, if they can summarize some of the problems that that particular group brought up, that their community, communities are facing, and then some of the ideas that were shared in ways of trying to address that particular problem. And I think, is this amplifying or is it just recording? It's recording, so I think we need to maybe take it off so we can give to the three people who are going to be speaking. Okay, so he'll leave one for me and we'll pass one around. Yes, the person who is going to give the report, if you don't mind, you can come up in this area. We know many of you were quite busy during the day. You may have not been able to meet with one of the groups, but we hope enough people did meet so that there was a healthy sharing process. So, Mother Jamuna, who was the writer for your group? Mother Jamuna here? Okay. Mr. Sumitra, did you did the writing? dark, so I can't see faces. I only see bodies. But I think if you can come up here, up to the microphone, the one he has. If you don't mind. But put it to the side so she's not sitting in front of Prabhupada. Okay, that's good. Is Pancharatna here this evening?
Yes.
Okay.
Do I need to I
think it may be nice. She's going to mention the countries, so you have a little idea of what the atmosphere is that the discussion is coming from. No, no, as you like.
It's okay.
Just kind of summarize the highlights. Lots of diversity.
Some of the main problems were that the sand in the temple wasn't so high. There was a strange situation there regarding the temple set up.
Can you speak a little louder?
Speak a little louder, because we'll have some translating in the back also, so speak a little louder. Yes, and some of the solutions that were offered. So these were some of the areas of problems that were shared in her group, and now they were giving some solutions of things they felt could assist. Okay. Okay, that's good. So we see that there were several different countries, different projects in different countries. Some things were similar problems that were being experienced. Some were different. But we hear there was some concern about sectarianism, and we see that happening and cropping up in many, many ways. And we understand that a lot of times it's due to insecurity. And so when people, again, are not so sure about themselves, about the institution, not so sure what their own responsibilities are, when the faith gets weak, all of these things, we find that it creates insecurities and it creates negative reactions. It's the Gosis. As we are Vaishnavas, our duty is constantly to be looking at what things we want to change and work on, improve in our lives. So where inventory is done constantly, then we'll see a certain amount of humility, certain amount of integrity and enthusiasm, because the science works. If the science didn't work, then we shouldn't even be worshiping Krishna. We should go worship Durga, Shiva, or Ganesh, or so, or just become Muslims, Christians, or whatever again. But the science works. And the fact that we have difficulties are often a sign that we need to look a little closer at the science so that we can minimize some of the complexities. So as the Gosis help us to tune in sometimes to what we are experiencing in the environment based on the philosophy. But we'll be shocked to see the number of projects that practically never have Istagosis. And we will notice that in most places where there is a lack of Istagosis, there is a lack of honesty, definitely a lack of healthy communications, and often leadership feels threatened. And so they're afraid to discuss things because they feel that it just turns into fault-finding, or just sentimentalism, because they pretty much are more sometimes interested in just productivity rather than looking closer at what the devotees who are their caretakers, who they're the caretakers for, are experiencing. More senior devotee visits. We talk about Krishna conscious culture, we're talking about family, and family means that there are various generations. Each generation is to feel good about itself and be able to offer to connect with the next. And so when we do not have those various connections, then we see that there is some suffering. Festivals and other congregational activities goes along very much with what we're discussing about the importance of samskaras, the importance of spiritual centered activities where everyone comes together to honor a particular event or to honor a particular rites of passage, to give their blessings and to remind each other about what is going on in the community at that particular time. So if we can take the next group. What was another group we had? Musi Maharaj? Your group? Who did the writing for your group? Did you? Yes, can you share with us? You can sit over there. Your chair, please. We can use the microphone. Can you give us a little idea of what some of the countries or projects that was represented? Okay. Those three present places. Yes.
And then Rick, he was a project. I myself thought that he more interested was this, and that myself and Pastor Mukha were to make some more pity to have a to look at one of the paramounts.
Okay. Lack of common focus. Okay.
And the question was, how did it happen that it became like that?
Mm.
Was this question. So So what is what was our response is the response when we were solving it, but we saw that was it kind of materialistic man going in the temple and in charge and then like Krishna consciousness in the management. And that leaders, meaning the leaders, the GDC or whatever, should have the courage to see that Krishna to see that Krishna consciousness in the temple is maintained. So the devotee says he goes to another temple and just follow his head.
Okay.
There was 1, 2, 3, 4 first here. But she thought that all problems were present in her province. Whatever she heard about.
Which country she's from?
Italy.
Italy, okay.
Always watch TV. Look at some movies. Don't go to Mangalore, hope for all kinds of things. Well, only the smoke hatches. Okay. Homosexuality of in the interaction can be disturbing. And then problem, everyone tries to live peacefully and not to see what others do. Because they're not going to see
Okay, this is good. So we see several things coming through. Concern about vision. And we understand that without vision, it becomes hard to motivate devotees for any particular goals. And if the vision does not seem to include the needs of the devotees, then one may enthusiastically follow it for a short time, but after a while, of course, one will lose that determination. So, that's it. Concern about external people.
That way, being disunity and harmony. then that was both in his own community, which is farm community in Sweden, and he goes to Denver. He was going from the go around, described a tremendous lack of faith in the community, in the leaders, lack of faith in GDCs, synagogues, etc. A concern that synagogues don't understand their problems and make unsatisfactory rules and laws, etc. And finally, he felt that their community is supposed to be a farming community. There was really not much farming going on. These were all problems. And finally, unless it's going from Brisbane, although he didn't identify any significant problems in his community, but he offered another suggestion, because the farm community is another problem in the farm community is that the youth are not engaged. Then I offered for my effort, I simply focused on the lack of qualified and competent leadership, and resulting in a whole list of things, lack of unified vision amongst the community, deficiencies in education, healthcare, lack of community participation, decision making, fragmentation, and politics within the community. And I simply address that as a matter of competent, qualified, concerned leadership. So, as far as solutions are concerned, in the case of the Brooklyn community, we offered a few suggestions that they should try to institute some sort of non-HUP or counselor program, or some sort of program that would bring the community more together. And also perhaps some courses, workshops and courses on building relationships. In terms of the UK situation, we focused on having more combined activities and, again, leadership training. In the case of the in Spain, we focused on culture, that the problem there was being identified, and was a need to transform our culture. And we talked about looking not so much at rules and regulations or even guidelines, but looking more at principles of how we behave towards one another and how we exist within the community. And of course, more meetings amongst the devotees on these issues without another education. And with life in office. Doing this. it was just for both the actually couldn't meet the pitch because we didn't have time. But we were just in terms of new go-around, and I guess my other were also just focusing on leadership and training, leadership training.
Okay, that's good. So there, we're kind of looking a little more specific at some of those issues. But we see lack of relationship coming through, cooperation, independence, lack of respect, loss of faith. I'm just dealing with Pancharatnas also. The incompetence or lack of vision amongst leadership, personalism, not enough reciprocation with senior devotees, communication problems, transportation problems. So, we've had a chance to look at a few of our issues. It's interesting. Some of them are quite similar. But many of these are symptoms of other problems. Just as when we're talking about Varnashram Dharma, engaging people, when you really care about someone, where there is compassion, there is character and competence, then one naturally is thinking about the individual and the group's future as well as their present. And you're learning from the past. And so many problems that perhaps may have been there can be eradicated because we learn from our problems when the constant caring spirit goes on. And we will naturally try to see how to keep everyone enthused. What the Prabhupada says, Savasakino Bhavantu, that one sign of good leadership is people are literally happy. Not that they're happy that they're given sense gratification, but they're happy because there's vision. They're happy because they're working together. They're happy because they're supporting each other. They're happy because of the past successes, encourages them about the future possibilities. Now, we ask Burke Rutford, the centennial year, we gave him blessings, our leadership, GBC, to do a survey on our movement worldwide to see what some of the major issues were that the devotees are dealing with, reflecting on. And the number one issue that was tabulated in the survey is one we see that appeared in everyone's report. And so the number one issue was a lack of trust. The number two issue that devotees felt was the most serious problem that our international society is facing was a lack of employment for its members, a lack of employment opportunities. Number three was inadequate educational alternatives. I just want to read the first two paragraphs where he discusses some things about the lack of trust. He says, there is a striking lack of trust as well as between devotees themselves. Survey respondents across regions express that view, that there is a lack of honest and open communication between the devotees, that impersonalism has been allowed to dominate devotees' relationships in place of friendship. And we see this appearing in all of your reports also. The findings presented also demonstrate that a lack of authority and a related lack of trust attribute to the gurus and or the GBC institution has had major consequences for devotees' commitment to ISKCON, full-time congregation, as well as former ISKCON members. Many devotee respondents expressed the view that ISKCON suffers from poor management. That appeared in practically every response. And that leaders are not always responsive to those that they serve. Now you can see this is a very serious issue because our movement is so much based on faith, dedication, and surrender. So much based on receiving from above, or is based on an autocratic paradigm. So, for the majority of those who were surveyed to feel that a major issue in our movement is a lack of trust between those who are leading us or guiding us is, of course, a very serious commentary. Many devotees respond, I'm sorry, there is reason to suspect that this only breeds mistrust and a sense that local as well as regional leaders are out of touch with the needs and lives of the average member. So we're talking about communities, we're talking about needs. And so the survey suggested that devotees are feeling that their needs are not sufficiently being addressed. A sort of concern expressed by devotees worldwide falls under the general heading of social development. Now, so what we have then is a general problem that devotees feel that they cannot put full trust in the leadership. Second is that, which naturally flows, the devotees are worried that under such arrangement, they are worried about their basic economic concerns, considerations. Where you feel not cared for, protected, valued, then one will feel some weakness about the things that are needed for them to execute their service. And then the third one, of course, was education. Because of basically our setup is such that often when our children need the association the most, then they have to go off to the public schools, etc. I just want to share some things with you that you may want to write down or just reflect on. Now, these are some things that I personally teach at universities to karmis, so I know the cutting-edge stuff that they are concerned with in management and leadership. I have a course now that's been going for, it's in its third year at a university in Washington or in Maryland, and I'll be doing one later at a Johns Hopkins, where we talk about certain very significant things about managing and leading organizations and corporations. And I give these presentations, and I get paid a professor's salary for the work, where we address very essential things. And so this is not just conceptualizing a theory, but these are things that we are teaching to people in government, in medicine, in business, etc. And so I want to share some of these, a few points with you, because some of these things are very relevant to our own situation. First thing is that sometime back, for instance, the American government was trying to figure out why the Japanese were excelling in so much of the technologies and businesses. And so they spent millions and millions of dollars to try to evaluate this. And so there was a study done out of Stanford University, and what they found was a couple of interesting things that's kind of related to the samurai or Bushido culture, where character integrity is even more important than life. What they found is that the Japanese in general had a greater kind of family culture in business, and that they were ready to make personal sacrifices for the whole. That they had greater trust in those who managed them. They felt more cared for. So these were the things they found that was helping the Japanese to excel, that was causing them to pass Americans in many ways. Although Americans had the best business schools, we paid the best salaries, we had the best technology, but somehow we're going farther and farther behind. So these are some things that's being taught at major business schools, where people are beginning to try to understand better that people matter. Now, some of the top business schools, Harvard, Oxford, other places, they're explaining that successful management is only about 15 to 20% technique and is about 80% relationship. So you can know many, many things, but if you do not have ways to transfer it, to communicate it, if you do not have ways to get people to work together in doing it, then there will be tremendous failure. Now, with the amazing globalizations of markets, where things are now expanding all over the planet, competition is very stiff. And so things have to be done faster, with more quality, cheaper price. So they're finding, and we're teaching, that what begins to make a difference is how people are empowered. And so, again, people become the real issue that determines the future success or determines whether an organization sometimes goes bankrupt. So now these are karmis who have very little understanding about higher values. But they are understanding that if you don't put people first, you are going to go out of business. If you don't have a trust culture, that you are going to have less and less people being able to ongoing give themselves. Their health will be affected, their minds will be affected, the output, the performance of their particular work. Now, I teach a course where I'm teaching to, my last course was a group of four doctors, the members of the Defense Department, the Department of Treasury in America, even one or two business coaches themselves who teach business management. and a group of teachers and some one or two people who were taking the course so that they could get a higher rating in their jobs from taking the course, and then some devotees. And we're just talking about basic things that make organizations work, basic things that allow leaders to empower others and allow leaders to be competent themselves in so many ways. And so many of these things have a spiritual connection. Just like, for instance, when someone leaves a community or an organization, they normally tell about 10 people about their problems. So when they leave, they carry bad news. And bad news travels many times faster than good news. You can do so much in trying to patch up a situation, but once the bad news is out there, it is out there. So when we lose a person, they tell at least 10 or so other people. Some of those may could join, some of those may could contribute or be part of a congregation, but many people, by that one person leaving, will be affected. It takes 6 times as much resources, energy, money, manpower, etc., investment, to make a new recruit than to keep an old one. So every time we have someone who's with us who leaves, it takes 6 times as much energy at least in trying to bring somebody in, and they're telling 10 times as many people bad things. So we really sort of shoot ourselves in the foot in amazing ways. Now this is very interesting. Most people think that someone would stop patronizing an organization or business. Say if you're a customer and you're buying something. Most people think that people will usually leave one agency and go to another because maybe they find a cheaper price or better quality. It's not really so much the case. Statistics have proven that about 10% of the people, they will leave one community or one supplier or one corporation because the competition offers something better. Only about 10%. Something cheaper, something with that's easier, accessible, whatever. Only about 10%. About 15% of the people leave because they are dissatisfied with a particular commodity, particular product. But 75% of people leave because they do not feel valued. In other words, people are ready to pay more. They're ready to tolerate many different things if they feel that they are important for those who they are dealing with. They'll even pay more. They'll even avoid going to a situation that even has sometimes better quality. But if they feel that they themselves are not valued, they will go. So this is relevant to us because we have now so many people leaving our society that majority of them are not leaving just because they have found something better, but they're leaving because they are so much feeling not valued, not cared for, not included in the vision. They begin to feel irrelevant, and so then the other things then become more attractive because of such. So when there's lack of faith from Google fall down, lack of faith from projects falling apart, lack of faith in considering what their future is going to be, then they have more tendency to go outside and to investigate other things or to embrace other things outside of Prabhupada's particular movement. So again and again, things come back and forth to relationship when we're dealing with community. The quality of relationship is very much determining our achievement and our success. Now the last 15-20 minutes or so we're here, we want to look at conflict resolution. And we want you particularly to consider carrying some of these things back to your community or in your family, because these things work and they can save us a lot of problems and help us to avoid a lot of offenses and cause us to move away from the basic alignment where we're constantly fighting each other like anything. First, let me mention, I'll do this in 3 categories for simplification. First first category we want to look at, well, let's preface before we go to the categories. We've mentioned earlier that conflict should not be seen as something bad. Once you see it as something bad, automatically you're going to bring harm to yourself and to others and to the environment. So we're going to look at conflict as a chance to look closer at certain needs and certain ways to serve each other. Now, the first category we want to look at is what people normally talk about when they talk about the idea of win-win. So there are four things we can look in our first category. The first way of dealing with conflict is the way the demons deal with it. Demons' consideration is that I can exceed only by your destruction. So this is the most demonic way, or the most gross way, to deal with any type of problem. My ability to succeed or be successful only can prevail by your demise. Demons, this is their mentality, destroy. That is the first aspect in this first category. Second is that I can win or be successful, but you have to lose. Not that I have to destroy you. First category, I have to destroy you. I have to wipe you out. I have to finish you. Second category is I win, but you lose. Third category is, of course, I lose and you win. And the fourth is I win and you win. We both have something to gain. So our Vaishnava situation should always be trying to consider how I grow, you grow, how I increase my service, you increase your service, how we both become enthused to serve community better, serve Guru, to surrender to the divine couple. So our way of dealing with conflict always should be in the mood of daso smio dasu daso no das. I am servant, I have a commitment and responsibility to become pure, I have a commitment to act in such a way that it encourages others to become pure. So that is our first category, that we are interested in this win-win conception of being concerned about the welfare of others as much or more than ourselves. Second aspect of conflict we want to look at is things that are particularly ineffective in approaching conflict. And these are in five parts. The first we've been referring to is the idea of battle. So this is the second classification we're looking at of conflict, and the first within that classification. So we say Roman numeral 2, number 1. That is a battle. That an issue is there, and then you go to war. Second is when conflict is there, and this is also ineffective, is when we go into an avoidance mindset. Sometimes there's an issue, there's a conflict, and we just try to avoid it as if it's just going to go away. Or we just consider it's not my problem, so therefore I'm not going to worry about it. This is an ineffective way because it will be there and sometimes it will come worse and become a cancer. And since we're personists and we're supposed to be responsible for each other, this is very unhealthy. Also, when we enter avoidance mode, we will gradually become polluted by the deviations, because unless we can somehow try to assist with some of the maya or eradicate it, gradually we will find ourselves being clouded and influenced by the maya. Third category is what people normally do when they think it's very healthy. They go to negotiation, mediation, arbitration, bargaining. But for Vaishnavas, this isn't enough. Because even when you go through negotiation, arbitration, and bargaining, then often people have to give up things that later they are disturbed with what they had to give up. They make commitments that later they are disturbed with. And so the problem can resurface, or one can feel that they gave more than what they get, and then something is underlining that then creates a particular issue. Now, these things we're going through, you write them down if you can or keep in your mind. And you can use these in any situation if it has not gotten too gross to be able to resolve it or bring it to some healthy conclusion. Fourth category is sort of a bandage thing, where a problem is there, and we just kind of address it very superficially with the idea that we've done our work, or we just kind of sort of in avoidance, so we do a little something just because we have to. So sometimes we approach the conflict in that way, and again, it will sever or become even more protracted. The fifth and last category here is called role playing, or the role player. This we do a whole lot in ISKCON. This is where we approach a conflict and we do it more or less based on status. I am the teacher, I am the senior devotee, I am the GBC, I am the guru, and therefore do what I say, listen to my situation, or I have priority in the concern, etc. And so this way of approaching conflict is very dangerous because it doesn't, again, bring in the caring, but it's kind of more of a imposition of forcing an idea or project or forcing a plan based on the fact that one is trying to hide behind their external position or their particular role in that sense. So these are five things that are ineffective as we try to approach conflict, and is our second category. Now our third category is in 8 steps, and these are particular things to do when a conflict is present. This is the real kind of hands-on stuff, with the idea that conflict is something that we can grow from. So this third, Roman numeral 3, first of the 8, is create an effective atmosphere. Create an atmosphere that is neutral, an atmosphere that is not threatening. If you're going to bring two parties together, a group of parties, it's important that the atmosphere that you're discussing the things in is an atmosphere that is not threatening, is an atmosphere that is physically comfortable, exhilarating, so that it sets the stage for a chance for people to begin to really to examine issues and to touch base. It's a small issue, but it's very important because it's like the foundation or the introduction of what you're trying to do. Second is that there's a need for parties and oppositions to clarify their particular perceptions of the problem. Sometimes just at this level you can resolve it, because when people really tune in to clarify what the issue or the problem is for themselves, many times the answers automatically or the conclusions, the closure happens right there, because they begin to see that their perceptions were improper, or they have similar perceptions, or that they are arguing a non-issue, that they are considering the other person is thinking this way or wanting to do this and they're wanting to do that. And sometimes it shows just by clarifying perceptions that it's not really an issue of conflict. 3 is to focus on individual needs in connection with shared needs. That is, you get the parties to express what is their need. What do they want? What is their concern? Their foremost concerns. And as you have both parties to do this, you try to look at what things they have in common that they both need, want, or are about. And if you can do this properly, sometimes the conflict can be resolved at this point, because they see that they really have so much more in common, so many things that they want together, that they need to do together, so many things that they're experiencing together, that they realize that there's more a likeness than the differences. Or from the shared needs, they begin to realize that they can put aside some of the differences, because the things that they both need are so important to each of them that the things that are different is secondary. 4th is you begin to build upon these shared positions. You spend some time showing the benefits that are there as they're able to focus on their common issues. And how they can do that to such a point that it can practically eradicate or minimize where there are the differences. Fifth, you try to really get them to look to the future. The conflict is there, so there's problems from the past. But if you keep the discussion on issues of the past, there will be stalemate. There will be ongoing issues that will not be able to be resolved. Now, you don't want to deny the past because the past has brought the conflict up. So the idea is you want to use the past to learn from it, but you want to focus mostly on what is the position for the future. So you are primarily looking to the future. You realize, yes, issues we've come together on, there's problems. You realize that. But you want to focus more on future and learning from the past. Otherwise, you'll just keep getting stuck and stuck, and this person did that, and this person did this, and that didn't happen, and so many issues. And it just brings anxieties, and it'll bring things to the fighting level. Six, you want to have somewhat of a free flow of looking at different options as you get the parties into discussing different possibilities. Well, they begin to see some solutions that are possible. As those solutions begin to come out, you start using this as stepping stones. Number seven is that you are looking at the solutions as you're talking with them and beginning to write down or record the solutions that they are both considering as possible or things that they are agreeing on. So you're getting them to agree on certain things, so it opens up a door now where there is some mutual appreciation. And last, as you get build up these things that they're agreeing on from the other previous 7 points, then you get them to form some type of agreements, some mutual agreements that they're going to be held responsible for. So these 8 steps we went through is that you first create an effective atmosphere. Second, you clarify what the perceptions are. Three, you focus on individual and shared needs. Four, you build up on these shared needs, where you're showing the synergy that's there. Five, you are looking primarily at the future. Past, yes. Who is more at fault? Who is less at fault? You try not to get involved in that. You want to learn from something from the past, and you want to look toward the future. You want to keep trying to bring things more toward the future. And now it becomes more easier to do as you look at number six, at you start moving with different options for the future. Recognizing the past has been complex and has been a disappointment. And then seven, you build upon these stepping stones, these things that you are able to connect on. You use that and you build upon it in any way that you can, in a creative way, and showing how all can benefit from this. And then you go in last as you get parties to accept certain things that they're ready to agree on, they're ready to honor, and to act upon. So these are the 3 categories that's there. Of looking for the win-win in the first category. Second category of understanding the different things that are ineffective. And the 3rd category, looking at the things that are effective. Now just a few small points just to enhance what we've already given you. If the benefits in maintaining the conflict is greater than the benefits in resolving the conflict is likely to go on. The parties must see that they have more to benefit by resolving the conflict than they do by keeping it on. If they feel that they have more to gain, or if they know they have more to gain By keeping the conflict going on, most likely the conflict is going to continue. So one has to try to set up a situation where the parties can see you both have more to gain by giving up this conflict. And so as we are selfish entities by nature in some extent, then one will see, oh, it is to my advantage to resolve this. Another point in the background is that sometimes we can have the parties to try to act as if they are the adversary, to argue the adversary's position, to present the adversary's argument, or to write a letter in the mood of the adversary. And many times as they do that, they will gain a tremendous vision of how the other person perhaps is feeling, thinking, or what the other person's needs and requirements perhaps are, which will help them to bring greater perception to the conflict than just seeing it out of their own particular glasses. And the last, I think that letter writing or articulate the particular issue, as well as knowing that it can be more healthily resolved when the party is feeling that the resolution of the conflict is going to bring more benefit than maintaining the conflict. Now, I could go into a few new things in the last 10 minutes, but we don't want to overload you today. So we'll stop here, and we'll see if you have any questions about the sharing that we had from the different four groups, or from the discussions that we presented in terms of the conflict resolving, or things that you may have thought about as you were moving through the day. Some of you may have to leave pretty soon, so let me give you your assignment for tomorrow, and then we'll take 10 minutes of questions. What do we have for this class? We have 2 more days?
Yeah.
Okay, this is 6, so we have 7, 8. So tomorrow's assignment, let's see, we want to make it a little simpler. Today we took it from the community. Now we want to bring it to the individual. So if possible, in the same groups that you were in, and somebody can relate this assignment to Pancharatna also, if you can find a time to get together, if possible, 45 minutes, hour at the most, and if you can share with the group what is giving you personally the greatest challenge in your own Krishna consciousness. What is giving you the greatest challenge? What particular thing may bother you the most? That is, either what's going on in the society, what's going on in your own life, something you're having trouble with trying to understand philosophically, whatever you would like to share that is giving you the greatest challenge in your own Krishna consciousness. And then as you share that with the group, then the group should try to offer some guidance, some assistance to you based on what your particular challenge is. So if possible, in the same groups, if you didn't show in a group today, then if you have time, join one of the groups. And so if possible, the same ones who wrote down before, you write down for your group, you summarize the points, and then we will share those tomorrow as we go into our discussion tomorrow, particularly about power, and we may address some things in relationship to leadership. So if you have some specific questions, let us look at some of those now. Are we clear about the assignment? So you look at what one of the things that's giving you personally the greatest challenge in your Krishna consciousness. This is all about, again, open communication, sharing, helping each other, creating a greater sense of authentic community versus pseudo-community. If you go over some of the things we've been discussing these last few days, or some of your notes, then you'll see why these assignments are important, as they give us a chance to apply what we're learning. And it gives us a chance to put systems into our communities that can help us to create a greater sense of healthy organic community. Anyone have any particular question they have? Hmm? Continue. Yes.
What to do when a person in a subordinate position sees the conflict and wants to do something to solve it in these 8 steps, but the person in the leadership position doesn't want to, not accept the process?
Then it is, of course, difficult. Because this process can be very successful if one has the ability to put it into practice. But if the situation is such that the leader is not so much wanting to honor conflict as a chance for growth, but sees conflict in terms of a battlefield, or wants to destroy and defeat the other, then there may be a serious problem. Sometimes the conflict has gone on or got to a level where this is the arena. The arena now is people trying to find each other's weakness, try to see how they can destroy. It's unfortunate when it gets to that level, but sometimes it's gone to a place where that's where we're at. The danger when it comes to that point, when it comes to Vaishnavas, is that aparads are going to be made on both sides. And parties, of course, are going to suffer. So if we are in a position where we are not able to control the situation to bring about this kind of investigation of the conflict, then of course it is very difficult. We can try to encourage the leader as much as possible to consider such. But what we can do is that when we do have chance of where we are in control of the situation or have some serious input, then we can make a difference, you know, in those cases. But where we cannot, we can just pray like anything. Any, yes, the question? Exactly. Yes, Prabhupada has explained our first duty is to save ourselves. That it's more important that we keep a devotee than to make a devotee. If we're just making devotees and then we're losing devotees, then this is, very unfortunate. And it's a sign that we're not really living up to our teachings. Because it means that we entice people to come, and after a while they see that we're not really able to deliver what we've invited them for, and then people will in fact go. Then we see the tremendous amount of energy it takes in making a new person. Plus, how we get discouraged when we constantly see those leaving. Then those who stay, it also influences or affects their own faith and determination. There was a time when Prabhupada himself was trying to curtail the expansion and to focus more on the inner cultivation, development, of purity. There were times when Prabhupada saw we were expanding so much and people were deviating and falling down and so many issues, and he particularly stressed that now we have to focus more on seeing that devotees are honoring the philosophy, honoring the principles more, the rules and regulations. Yes?
When everybody was going over the difficulties in their own communities, for example, one example is where there's a temple outside only once a week, and one temple where there's drug use going on, poverty, so many different. What can be done about these leaders of these individual temples? They're the ones that really need to. Some things can be done about the leaders who are controlling the whole area of the society. We can discuss this amongst ourselves. A lot of us have to be very new. I can hear it, I can absorb it, but then again, when I go back, I'm still facing the same problems. Because the leader of the temple, he either has heard it, or has ignored it, or he's been there for 20 years, 30 years, he's still set in the middle, like,
well, several things. One, as the devotees under the care of such leader raise their own quality, it will put pressure on the leader also to come up to a higher standard. But our general tendency in our autocratic system is that we kind of connect with the level, you know, of leadership. And that's there. So therefore, our system is such that leaders are supposed to monitor leaders. That we have a board, GBC board, and we're supposed to check on each other, to evaluate things based on certain standards. And we have executive committee that's supposed to watch to see where there are discrepancies and to try to help and to try to arrange for rectifications. So sometimes these things are dealt with, sometimes they're ignored. It's like we're discussing the different ways of not dealing with conflict. So sometimes we avoid, and then later times we jump in, and then we jump in a crisis mode or battle mode, and then there can be a problem. Yes. There are some devotees. Anuttama was arranging for some devotees who gave leadership course at Alachua, and also I think they taught at New Vrindavan. There's about three devotees who have been working in.